Welcome to the podcast, Mr. Webb.
Ammon, how are you, my friend?
I am good.
Fall is setting in.
Yeah, it's nice out there.
Days are getting cooler. I love it.
Yeah.
I'm ready for the change, getting away from the fire season. It's just so nice to have the change of seasons.
I agree. It's nice out there. We live in a really cool spot. Ashland just explodes with color, especially like Lithia Park in this time of year.
Yeah. You've been up there? I haven't been up there since the fall hit. Is it starting to change?
I haven't either. I'm going there this weekend, though, for a photo shoot. So
nice.
I'll let you know.
Cool.
Next week.
It'll be too late. It'll all be gone.
You know? True. I know. Yeah. It's pretty crazy how fast it changes.
Yeah.
So I had a couple of questions I wanted to bring you on the podcast and ask you publicly. One thing I've been thinking about is the hardest part about running a restaurant.
It's a bit of storytelling, but it's interesting because when I went to open Raw, I looked at it not as a restaurant. I looked at it as a juice bar, as a health center almost. But what I found out, because people were telling me, why do you want to open a restaurant? It's like, it's not really a restaurant. You know what? And the reality of it is, it is a restaurant.
Yeah, I mean, it falls in that category.
It falls in that category. And so, you know, everybody tells you, well, your profits are 3% and, you know,
it's all a difficult industry for sure.
It's a very difficult industry. It's very rewarding and it's very challenging. Ashland's a small town. So you spend a lot of time working on customer service. It's really important that people are happy when they leave. And you have to find that line between people, you know, taking advantage sometimes.
Yep.
And you do, you know, you learn.
I mean, the nature of it.
Like I said, it's a small town, but I love caring for people. I want people to leave happy. I want them to walk out going, that was one of the best meals I've ever had, or this juice is amazing, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what my goal is for the people. Running a restaurant is very challenging. We thought because of the uniqueness of our company and our brand and the products we offer that, and this is so silly because everybody tells you it takes 5 years, you know, 3 years, 5 years, whatever that number is. But, and most restaurants don't make it 5 years, 95% close within 5 years. And we've been, almost 7 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was, Starbucks, you know, you call that a restaurant. It's somewhat coffee shop / restaurant.
Yeah.
But they didn't do their second store. I think it was year number 11.
And that's really?
It's a crazy story. So it wasn't like they opened and then just started franchising. It took a while for them to get number two.
Right.
So, you know, so it is, we thought we were going to open and the money was going to roll in and... We immediately, when I say immediately, within 120 days, had such a debt load, I didn't know how we were ever going to dig out. We were inefficient. We were buying produce way too expensive. We had some produce buyers that are produce sellers to us that were really taking advantage of the new guy.
Yeah.
And I quickly became educated in all these things. And I didn't know how we were going to dig out. And I remember telling my amazing wife probably two or three times in summer of 2014, I said, well, I think we have 3 days left. And she's like, what? And I said, well, we bounced the produce check and I just don't know where it's going to come from. And by you know, a miracle, we stayed open and we had other investors that believed in us and wanted to come on and invest a little more money in it. It took another $100,000 after the day we opened to kind of finally get our legs under us.
Yeah,
but it's a nature of the restaurant business.
Bit of a learning curve there.
It is
for sure.
Yeah.
Well, I think that Ashland's a great place that people really appreciate health here, and you know, as we grow, whether it's in 7 years or whatever, I hope that we can find another location that's just as receptive to the market and to our healthy.
Yeah, there's some news coming shortly.
Wink, wink, nod, nod.
There's some news coming within the month that we are excited to share with you. Stay tuned.
Yeah, for sure.
It'll be a Webb and Karen podcast when we do that.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
Okay, so before we started the podcast, you were also talking to me about the benefits of, the importance of organic food over processed food. And this is something that I touched on a couple episodes ago with Braden, the manager, how... everything that comes in the door is 100% certified organic, which is, it makes us unique.
So it's a deep passion for Karen and I. Being a former farmer back in my youth and first couple of years Karen and I were married, I farmed and we sprayed everything and anything and we used whatever we could to get more production. Mm-hmm. And over the years, I've watched people suffer from illness. I've watched them myself. And I can't necessarily put my finger on that it was the sprays that we used or the fertilizers we used. But you have to go back to the core of whatever your belief structure is of the produce that you have and the intention of that produce and the products we have. And the closer you can get to the design of those things, the more the more important it is. So for us, you know, we have watched in my lifetime, in my 62 years, and I've in most recent years, the last decade or maybe decade and a half, have really looked at the organic produce, the organic style of growing and eating, and realized that this is a major goof, was the idea that you can provide fertilizers and you can provide sprays. And the selling point in the 60s and 70s was that, well, we're going to be able to provide for the whole world because the production is going to increase to such a degree. And it's all a big lie. Because in the end, and they thought truly that that was going to be the case. Because initially it seems that way. Mm-hmm. But down the road, it's not any more productive than growing it the old-fashioned way. The old-fashioned way is a little harder. It's a little harder to grow things with bugs and and worms and deal with those issues. It's so much easier to spray them, but then you contaminate the vegetables, the fruit, etc. Yeah. I mean, if you walked into an orchard and you knew that orchard had been sprayed, you're going to be less apt to bite into that apple.
Oh, yeah.
Even though 100%. They tell you, oh, it's you don't have to worry about it. It's all dissipated off the surface.
Right.
But what goes...
False.
Yeah, false. And same as your skin. Put something on your skin, it goes into you.
Yeah, it's absorbed.
Right.
And so, I think that the awareness around that fact is increasing. And so, which I like. I like that people are starting to care more about what they're putting in their body and being more intentional with where their food was grown. And I like what you said about, I actually didn't know that it was harder to grow the old-fashioned way.
No, it's harder to grow
inorganically.
Inorganically, yeah.
So I was talking to the owner of Noble Coffee, which is where we get our coffee beans.
Yeah.
And he actually showed me a picture, because everything at Noble is organic, all their coffee beans. And he showed me a picture of a inorganic coffee field. And it looks very, very clean and neat. You know, everything is in rows. Everything is really uniform. And he's like, this is a organic picture of a farm. He showed me the next picture. And it was just like, it looked like an Amazon rainforest. Like, this is what coffee should look like.
Yeah, yeah.
And it didn't even look anywhere near the same. So I think that's pretty crazy.
Produce that is grown today, for the amount of people we have on planet Earth, it's in rows and other things. And organic food is grown that way as well. But however, that was not necessarily the intent, you know, to have 500 acres or 10,000 acres all farmed out and rowed up. But you do have to kind of deal with the effectiveness. And, you know, people ask me all the time, why don't you open a restaurant in, you know, Podunkville? And it's like,
oh, I've been there.
Yeah, exactly. We all have. And it's like, because there's no people there.
Right.
Well, yeah, but we would love to have your stuff there. It's like, yeah, we'd have like 8 sales a day. You
right.
know?
Yeah, it just doesn't
so
make it.
It's like the farmers the same way. They have to be profitable. It's just the way it
is.
Yeah,
sure.
So for us, you know, we're 100% organic. We're very passionate about that. If sometimes some of the things we've seen lacking over the years, lemons, celery, apples, where it's been really difficult to get them.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you see, I've even seen this at the co-op where if they can't get something, they will brand it conventional. So you know
cool.
It's been sprayed.
Huh.
And but we won't do that here. I mean, if
you just won't bring it in.
No. For instance, let's say if, you know, like in the drink you're drinking right now, the Carabiner, there's celery and there's cucumbers and there's kale and there's apple and lemon.
And cilantro.
And cilantro.
Wow.
Yeah. So fantastic. Let's say we can't get celery. Well, then we're not going to make Carabiner that night, you know. And we've had real close. Sometimes we've got real close to not being able to to provide some of our products. But we look ahead. I watch the trends of things that are gapping, they call it, in the produce world, where they're not available, and yeah. we'll store up for them. But so it's really, if it's not organic, you're not going to eat it raw. It's just the way it is. The only exception, and it's not an exception, but like for instance, the berries we get from Pennington Farms, they don't use any sprays. They grow them better than organic because the restrictions they put on themselves are higher than that. I've walked the property with Sam Pennington out there. They do a wonderful job, and they didn't go organic. They chose not to certify because it's a huge, expensive process, and it just didn't seem to benefit them and what they do. So I respect that. I know the farm, but only if I know the farm and walk the property would I ever provide those things that are not certified.
That's cool. Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
As a consumer.
So it's a real passion for us. We feel really strong about that because our bodies were not intended to ingest the garbage that comes through chemicals. And
right. Yeah. Well, another question I had, which is a pretty good segue into our cold pressed. I would like to hear from the mouth of the CEO why we cold press our juice.
There's basically three different ways to make juice. One is use centrifugal juicer, and you get those at Costco, you get those at Macy's or whatever, usually whatever.
Yeah.
And you drive the juice into a little spinner blade and it has a screen. And
I've got one.
You've got one. Yeah. And it's better than having something that's pasteurized.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is at the micro level, you actually have heating. And it is destroying...
Because of like a spinning frictional blade.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Actually, for a microsecond, it gets hot.
It heats up.
Heats up. So what happens is you're killing the nutrients. You're killing the enzymes that are in there. Mm. And even some of the bacteria. Now, all juice has bacteria that we serve. Good and maybe bad. Hopefully not bad.
Mm-hmm.
But it has bacteria. And again, that's the nature of vegetables. That's when you have a salad, it's going to have some good bacteria, might have some bad bacteria. Hopefully it doesn't have something that makes you sick. And we are really careful about our washing and our taking care of those, the produce that comes into raw.
Yeah, prepping all the produce.
But when you do, when you're spinning that, and you'll look at that, the separation that occurs in a juice that is made in a centrifugal way, separates very quickly.
Yeah.
Within minutes, it's completely separated out. And basically what you did is you've opened up the cells, you've heated them, and then you've poured them out. There's been no squeezing whatsoever. In the centrifugal, usually your pulp is really heavy. It's really full of juice. There's been no pressing. When you press, you release a lot of the nutrients and enzymes and the wonderful part of the juice that we have it raw and other companies that do cold pressing as well. It takes a while to do that. We have this big, juicer at raw that presses at 30,000 pounds per square inch.
That's crazy.
And it releases.
Don't put your arm in there.
Yeah, exactly. But if you taste the pulp that comes out after a cold press, it doesn't have much flavor. It's all been squeezed out of the produce, the celery, the whatever you're doing. So
in the cold press.
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, so you have the centrifugal and then you have a masticating juicer. A masticating juicer has gears. It creates some heat, but not as much as the cold press does. It's a very efficient way to juice. We use some of the produce that we juice, we use a masticating juicer, an angel juicer.
Is that the one where we do it with the grapefruits? It kind of like spins a little?
No, that's different. We use that for the grapefruits and oranges. It's a little bit of a press, but allows us to be really efficient with our juicing for them and also keep it really fresh and have the best flavor. But so you got your masticating, which is like our angel juicer. Breville has a juicer like that. There's a lot of them out there.
Oh, like for the wheatgrass.
Yeah, like we use for the wheatgrass. So it squeezes. It creates a little bit of heat, not too much, but it's very effective to removing the juice and the nutrients from. It's just not an efficient way to do 100 pounds of apples. And the heat is an issue a little bit, but not a lot. So we do it for things like kale, cilantro, the leafy vegetables. It does a really good job of extracting the nutrients and the juice out of that.
That's cool.
And then, of course, the cold press, which we've already talked about, which is a really effective way. The maximum temperature change from putting produce into that juicer and coming out in the vat that holds the juice is 2 degrees. So there's
almost no heat produced.
Almost no heat generated.
So the centrifugal way produces most heat.
Yep.
And then
masticating
is a little less, but still
little
some
less,
heat.
Yeah.
And then cold press is almost no
correct.
Heat.
Correct.
Gotcha. And so that preserves 100% of the nutrients.
I believe it does.
Yeah.
100% of the nutrients. I don't know why it wouldn't. I'm going to say yes on that.
Yeah. I mean, I hope so.
Yeah. It's high, high, high percentage.
I mean, it's the best way.
Yes.
Yeah. Of the three that you're talking about.
Correct.
And I remember Braden tell me one time that there's 3 pounds of produce in each.
Yeah. Between 2.5 and 3 pounds.
In
it
each
takes
juice.
To make each juice. That's correct.
That's awesome. That's a lot of nutrients.
It is. It is. And that's why when people look at your juice, they go, oh, it's kind of expensive. It takes 3 pounds of produce.
Certified organic.
Certified organic.
Cold pressed.
Yep. Lots of manpower and,
it's tasty.
Stores got to pay, got to pay the bills too. So,
yeah, for sure.
So I feel really good about our price points. I know what things cost and I know the labor that goes in. So I feel really good about it.
And also on top of that, to justify the price even further, we put all of our juice in glass.
Glass.
As opposed to plastic.
Man, it is. I will say this. This is where it works. If we, as we bottle in glass, if people bring those glass jars back, that's where it works. If you do a study on plastic versus glass, plastic is only about 9% gets recycled. And the problem with plastics and recycled is that they don't get made into water bottles again. The use drops down and then drops down.
Right.
And then it's garbage,
Like they'll send it back to wherever and they'll make a couch out of it, which doesn't really get recycled. It just kind of...
Right.
So it eventually gets recycled into something that just ends up in a landfill.
Yeah. So with glass, unfortunately in America, we only recycle about 33% of the glass that we have. Mm. Most of the glass ends up in the landfill, which is really sad because the unique part of glass versus plastic is that if we take these bottles that we have and they were broken down and recycled and remelted, they could make a glass again, just like a jar, just like we have again.
Mm-hmm.
Plastic, you can't do that.
It
drops down a notch.
Gotcha.
So, but for us, even the better way is that the bottles are shipped here. We sanitize them. We fill them with wonderful tasting juice that goes out to our public. Hopefully they bring them back. We scrub them up. We sanitize them again. We fill them again.
Yeah.
So that's the best use because then this jar is being used over and over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no degradation. Like plastic, if you use it over and over, it starts to break down. It starts to release little bits of plastic.
That's a cool thing. I think that's a really great for the business model. It's a great incentive. Like we offer 50 cents for the 12 ounce, $3 for the 32 ounce. It's a good incentive for people to bring them back and it's good for the earth. I don't know, like BPAs and things from plastic that get put into your juice over time as they degrade.
Yeah.
So it's good for the health.
We need to, as a country, we need to really get, ahead of that because like I read this morning in Switzerland, 95% of the glass gets recycled, which is crazy. Why aren't we doing that?
Man, it really seems like they have their stuff together. They've just got it figured out in Switzerland.
I know they do. It's awesome. It's a cool country. It's got really great mountains. Yeah. I want to go there someday.
Me too.
Yeah.
Number one on the list.
So yeah, the glass is really, again, like the organics, it's really important to us. We're struggling right now because, as you know, there's a huge glass shortage.
Right.
We just had 900 bottles delivered here today, which, you know, if we didn't have any returns, that would give us about a week.
Right.
But it's...
bring them back, people.
Come on, bring the bottles back. We need them. Please, please, please.
Yeah. So one thing I wanted to mention to further validate cold press and the health benefits of it is that I don't want to disclose your age.
Go right ahead.
But was it rheumatoid arthritis that you had?
Yeah.
And now 6-7 years later, you're like summiting Mount Shasta.
So yeah. 2002, real quick. 2002 was diagnosed. Got on some heavy duty medicine like 2003. Did 10 years of that. During that time, I actually felt pretty good, but I was worried about the medicine. I think I mentioned it in my previous podcast.
Yeah, the first episode.
Yeah. And, but I got healthy. And then the best part was when I started juicing, I was able to get off all my medicine. And if I eat well, take care of myself, exercise, I don't have any flare ups. And
nice. That's amazing.
Yeah. So I'm kind of hoping I can climb Shasta again next year.
Yeah.
I'll be 63.
Ew.
You know, it's like, but the first year I was up there, I met guys in their 60s. And I thought, yeah, maybe, you know.
I mean, you and I went snowboarding and skiing at Shasta, and I was struggling to keep up with you.
I don't know about that.
Yeah. It's true.
We had fun. It was a good time. Sure. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on.
Sure.
Appreciate your time. Love what we're doing. Drink cold pressed juice.
Get you healthy.
Yeah.
Makes you feel good. We really appreciate the folks that come in and drink in the health.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, everyone. Stay healthy out there.